I feel like we traveled back in time this weekend, and it's like we started comic book collecting all over again. Welcome to another Magic City podcast, guys. We are
George.
I am Paul.
I'm Jimmy. Make sure to like and subscribe so you can tune into this YouTube video just to tell you why we felt like newbies. So this past weekend, we went to Windy City Pulp and Paper Convention, which for those of you that don't know, it's actually a convention on pulps. You guys want to give a rundown of what pulps are?
So pulps are, if you time travel back to the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, while there were still comic books, there were pulps. And pulps were like these, it was like a magazine that told you stories. Not really, not so much illustrations, not so much art, but there were stories in there. And a lot of the great science fiction writers that we know today came from these pulps. Example, H.P. Lovecraft, Orson Welles, Jules Verne.
Edgar Rice Burroughs.
And a lot of famous characters that you know and love today, like Conan el Bárbaro, the Barbarian. And Buck Rogers. I know it might be a little bit too much or too old for some of us. Yeah. We didn't grow up on Buck Rogers, but he came out of the pulps. And who else? Tarzan. The ape man. So a lot of these characters that we all know and love came from these pulps.
And a lot of these pulps led into the 50s and the 60s with the pre-code horror, with the science fiction mixed with the historical aspects, like, you know, a futuristic man in a dinosaur world. And honestly, it was one of the most eye-opening experiences we've had in a long time, just because I walk into a convention, I know what I'm looking for, I know what things are worth. I walked in here, I was like, is $50 a good price? Is this even a good book?
Yeah, you know? I was actually going to ask you guys about that. Like, walk me through what you guys saw, because I wasn't able to go. So just like the people listening, I'm one of those today in this episode. So what was your experience? What did you guys see? How different was it from like a regular comic convention?
So it's the same type of style, same type of layout. It's just what you see in front of you isn't comic books. We're used to seeing comic books. We know and love comic books. Think of a con that you go to on a regular basis for comic books, but just full of pulps. So if you don't know pulps, then you're going to be completely lost. So it's the same thing. They have their racks and they're lined with pulps instead of with, you know, Wolverine and Hulks and Fantastic Four, is just full of pulps.
You have The Shadow, you have Detective Mysteries, you have amazing stories, amazing adventures, a whole bunch of titles that we had no idea existed.
So pretty much the way I did it, you know, we did our first pass, and then we walked outside of the convention hall, and we were okay. Let's regroup. Let's talk about what we just saw, because it was completely out of our element, and we had done research.
Yeah,
we looked some of this stuff up, and you know, we kind of went down the rabbit hole, but when you get there, man, and it's just completely, it's a shocker because you're out of your element.
I can feel that. It's probably, would it be closest to like when you first went to your first comic book convention, like where there's just so much to see and you're not sure where the prices should be at? Where you kind of feel like overwhelmed?
I would say it's more, when you went into your first comic convention, I still knew the X-Men. I still knew JLA. I still knew Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, even the oddball characters, the Guardians, Booster Gold. I just felt like, I was like, I have no idea who these people are. I'm like, I could be holding a $1,000 book or a $10 book. Mm-hmm. They could have told me a price. I would have been like, hey, that sounds like a fair price.
Yeah, we jumped in head first, and I'm kind of glad we did, because that's kind of how you learn the best.
Yeah.
So knowing, you know, hindsight after the con, I know a lot more. I feel like I got a good education lesson.
I realized that for the bougie collectors, there is no such thing as a near mint copy of a pulp. And if it is, you're going to pay away your life savings for it.
True.
All these books were graded, were very good, fine minus. There were very few that we saw that were fine plus, very fine minus. And they, you could tell there's frailing. It's also a different type of paper. It's like the newspaper paper, the old novel paper. So there's a lot of tanning, a lot of foxing. The spine. Mm-hmm. The spines have become detached, or they've frailed on the top and the bottom. Some are completely detached. But it was a completely different ambiance. You throw in pulps or cosplay in there, all these old guys are going to have heart attacks.
And yeah, what Jimmy said is right. You know, these books are almost 100 years old on some of them, mm-hmm. you know, 20s, 30s. They're coming up on 100 years old. And a lot of them have been just hidden away in basements yeah. and attics and God knows where. And they're all just, they're rough. And when you find high quality, good, great stuff, then that's the stuff you're going to pay more. And that's the stuff that people are just going crazy for because you can't find it. It yeah. barely exists.
And you could sort of see, I would call it more of the changing of the guard mm-hmm. because we were talking to some of the dealers there and they were like, you know, there's a lot more comic vendors than there have been in the past couple of years. I was like, dude, there's like 4 comic vendors. But to him, he was the only one in the past because he had pulps and comics. And now there's 4. I saw an artist there that was selling his prints and doing illustrations of modern characters. So you could start seeing sort of it's like crumbling in. CGC was there. So you could, even though pulps are not being graded, they are going to be graded. They've said that announcement. But you could see it like the infiltration or it's about to go mainstream, about mm-hmm. to go bigger spread to a larger audience.
I mean, that kind of, I can understand why they may frown upon it because it's like, oh, they're coming into our space. But that's a whole new set of people that can now buy your books that don't know they're there.
Well, it's like I told Jimmy, they're like the gatekeepers of right. the pulps. You know, one of the ongoing jokes between Jimmy and I while we were there was that we were the youngest people in the room.
Easily by 30 years.
And it wasn't a far-off statement. You know, we ran into a couple of people our age, but, I mean, there were no kids around. There were no 18-year-olds, you know, in the 20s or 30s. These are people that have been doing this. One of the things that I noticed was that at the auction, because we'll talk about the auction in a minute, but at the auction, the gentleman running the auction said that he remembers buying his first pulp in the 60s. In the 60s, the pulps were already 30, 35 40, years old.
Yeah, 40 years old from the 20s.
So he remembers buying those pulps in the 60s, which is what, the Silver Age of comic books?
Mm-hmm.
So he was buying books that are already 30, 40 years old. And, you know, we're, from the 60s to today, how many years is that?
Like, what, 60 years? Today, it's 60 years old. And, I mean, I don't think the dude is 70 or anything to that effect, but he sort of, I guess he migrated towards the pulps versus towards the superheroes.
Right.
Or maybe it's, hey, my dad used to read pulps, so I'll do that, you know? Yeah. So it was interesting, eye-opening. Yeah, I kid you not, there were probably like maybe 10 or less of us, like in our age range. Like you would see the typical dude. And it's funny because you have people that are just collecting novels, collecting stories, collecting. It's sort of like it's stuck in the past. So it's funny because Paul was buying a book and he's like, oh, I accept check. Me and Paul look at each other like, whoa. And we saw people pay with checks, paper checks, like, and very honest system, you know. And then he paid through PayPal and he's like, oh, you want a check that went through? It's like, no, I trust you. I'm like, whoa. Like, you wouldn't get that in our circuit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess this is what Comic Cons were like in the 60s and 70s, what regular comic book conventions were like.
Yeah.
You know, was that just that old school kind of like feel and vibe to it? But it was good. I mean, comic book wise, yeah, there was a wall that had a bunch of Golden Age. So I mean, Golden Age comics and pulps kind of like go hand in hand. But then there was one guy that had a bunch of boxes, and you know, it's like you can't get away from it. I'm flipping through the box. And I'm like, wow, look what I found! And it was a Spawn one.
And I remember he says the last thing I thought I would find here is a Spawn one.
Yeah, you like if you're gonna go to that show looking for a first Miles Morales, a first Gwen Stacy, you're not gonna find it there.
Yeah,
you know, you might find a first X-Men, a first Fantastic Four, bunch there was of Golden an Age
130.
Yeah, a bunch of Golden Age Batmans, bunch of Golden Age detectives, all of those stuff were there. But the meat and potatoes of it, man, were pulps
and just old school stuff, periodicals, newspapers of when we bombed Pearl Harbor, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, just the Kennedy assassination, everything.
That to me is cool because it's like a snapshot. It's like a moment in time that's frozen.
Yeah, but it's like, and also the storage of these things, I think that's why it also plays into effect that they're very good because they were all stored like in old Amazon boxes. They're not all CGC boxes or anything to that effect. It's more of like, hey, I'm just keeping this in my closet, my mm-hmm. basement in the up north, whatever it might be.
And another thing too that I noticed was the pulp novel is alive and thriving because they have people there and they have publishing houses there that still to this day write pulps. there were artists that do the covers and the interiors for the pulps, and then there were the writers that to this day write pulp novels.
That's cool. I didn't know they still did them.
And sort of an education experience for me, pulp novels is sort of like the 1920s, 30s style of writing. Like, you know, the crass jokes or the very detective noir or science fiction, weird sci-fi, you know, it's all that. That's all what it's encompassing. And then there was even another publishing house there that's publishing new stories of Tarzan that we were talking to him for a little bit and just what it's taking. And just, I guess, imagine us when we're in our 80s and new stories of Superman come out. It's something to that effect.
So yeah. did you ask them, are they like updating these stories, or are they keeping them within like the same time period and like the same style of writing?
It seems like they're keeping them in the same style of writing, but integrating newer tech or newer stuff that you see today.
Yeah, but it's still like within that film, the within that time frame.
Okay.
Like the 30s to the 60s.
You see a lot of Zeppelins, a lot of like steampunk, noir, you know, detective. But yeah, to some effect, they are updating like the technology that these characters use and the stuff that they bring to the table. But I guess they're trying to mash it into the new generation, but it's still heavily based on the old school.
Okay, that's cool. You know, I mean, younger people still read that kind of stuff because steampunk is still pretty big. Cosplayers, you know, wearing steampunk outfits. So incorporating that into their books will keep them alive.
And it's funny how Paul said that these are the gatekeepers and, you know, knock on wood, it sucks to say, but like I heard 3 or 4 condolences being given, you know, to other people and just saying, you know, like it's sort of like the changing of the guard is coming. And that's sort of all these older, same thing with Golden Age, with war comics, with romance, like the changing of the guard is going on because a lot of these people are, you know, up there in age and you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a good transition for the next bit, which was the auction that we attended. Mm-hmm. So Friday night and Saturday night, they were doing an auction. And the auction was because the gentleman that owned all these pulps had passed away. Yep. So his wife had inherited the collection. But the gentleman was involved in the circle of, you know, the pulp collectors, the pulp con guys. So I guess to be able to maximize the returns that he can give the family, the auction house went and put all his books up for auction. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the bee's knees of pulp comics.
It was literally probably night one was 150. It was 200 listings, but of those 200 listings, there were some groups of like 4 books, things like that. So it was probably, I would say, close to 500 books that were auctioned off. And then night two, like that was like the big boy.
So
night two, the major leagues.
Night two, if you follow us on IG or you follow us on TikTok, we posted some of the stories on there. And, you know, night two, you had the first appearance of Conan, which he also had the second appearance and third appearance.
Yep.
And then the classic Batwoman cover
from
Weird Tales.
Weird Tales, October 1933. It's basically, they call it, it's a woman with her arms up in the air and she's wearing a bat on her head. Very Catwoman-ish, very Batwoman-ish. And then the first night, they had the first Buck Rogers. So if you're getting into pulps, those are apparently equivalent to Action 1, Detective Comics 27, and Amazing Fantasy 15.
Uh-huh.
Like, those are the 3 big pulps to get.
You know, obviously, Conan is Conan. There's a huge following for Conan. What was her name? Marjorie Brundridge, right?
Brundridge, yes.
She was one of the most famous pulp artists, cover artists that exists. Like, she did all the classic covers. She's the one that did the Batwoman, and she's the one that did most of these classic covers. A lot of these pulps, the covers, a lot of these pulps are cover-driven, kind of like Golden Age books.
Yeah.
The stories aren't so much, you know, the greatest, unless they have a Lovecraft story in them, unless they have a Orson Welles story in them. But the covers is what drives a lot of these. And one of the sought-after types of books is the spicy pulps.
Spicies, yes. Spicies, very good girl art, red nails. Very basically bare-chested women on the cover, the whole good girl, you know, it was the pinup models, it was the see-through lingerie, it was everything like that, and that's like a whole genre in and of itself.
And bondage.
Yes.
There's a lot of adult content on some of these covers, but bondage, you know, bare-chested and just graphic.
Yeah.
Some of them are just pretty graphic.
And to the most part, there was some art inside the books, but on a 100-page book, you probably have like 5 pages of art, 5 to 10 pages of art. It's really on the cover buys.
And then most of the cover art is painted. So there's actually paintings out there from these cover arts.
We passed by a booth that had the painting of the actual oversized painting of it, and then they had the pulp right next to it. So it's like, oh, look, this is what it is.
Yeah, it's actually in our reels. If you check out our reels on IG, you can see that that section of the video where I took the video of the actual painting and the pulp cover. Yeah.
What were the paintings going for?
They weren't.
Yeah.
They weren't.
Like, it was one of those ask for price situations. It was, yeah, it was kept in the back, but you could see, you know, very prominent.
Yeah, one of the gentlemen that ran the auction was, you know, we've come to find out that he owns a lot of the big time paintings for some of these pulp covers.
Doug, he's the one that actually puts on the convention. Yeah, he owns it. And yeah, he has. We were talking to somebody else. He's like, yeah, he probably has like 60% of them.
And then there's the University of Connecticut.
In Bristol, yes.
And Bristol has a lot of the original pulp covers that exist. And I guess every year for 2 months out of the year, they actually do a display.
Well, that's cool.
So if you guys are interested in actual original pulp cover art, check out the University of Connecticut in Bristol, their website, and they should be able to tell you when those exhibits are coming on.
And it's funny because, I don't know, South Florida, we don't know if it's the market for these. When we come across collections, and we come across a lot of collections, we've never seen pulps. We've come across one pulp collection that we picked up in all the years.
Right.
Even before we all got together, I'd never seen pulps in my life.
Man, it looks like it's an emerging genre.
Yes.
It's an emerging collectible that, you know, there's, like Jimmy said, there's the Action 1, there's the AF-15 of pulps. Just like there's an Action 1 and AF-15 of video games, I'm sure there's an Action 1 and AF-15 of VHS somewhere.
But you know, what about Betamax? Paul, is that the next one?
Yeah. You know, you got Pokemon, you got baseball, football cards. You know, you have those equivalents in other collectibles, and pulp seems to be having those collectibles or those equivalents also.
Mm. It's funny because you saw, I mean, just, it was the first time I was in a live auction. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, and props to John, the auctioneer. Very clear, very concise, not confusing, not the whole mumble auction that we all see on TV and movies. It was very precise. He's like, I got 20. Do I got 30? Do I got 30, 40? Like, it was very well organized. And, yeah, it was a little, like, heart racing, to say the least.
Oh, and, you know, it's funny because the guy starts, can I get 300? Nobody bids. Can I get 200? Nobody bids. Can I get 100? You get one bid. And then from that one bid, that book ended up like at $800.
Exactly.
Ah, because yeah, people start and they want the book, so they start fighting against each other and they start bidding.
Yeah, no, it was crazy because he would do that, and then I caught myself and I would write it down. I'm like, but he went above starting bid. So it's sort of, you get wrapped up in the emotions and everything. So,
well, it's like they said, you only need two people at an auction, right?
Famous words.
You only need two people in an auction that want the same thing, and
that's it. It's over.
The price can go, it can skyrocket because, you know, as long as somebody wants that book, they're going to go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely a learning experience. If you're not into pulps, I suggest you get into it just for the knowledge, because it is part of the whole collectible market, you know, comic books, books, and all that stuff. It's good to expand the mind and learn, because you're more than likely to run across a comic book collection that has pulps. And if you don't know, you'll leave them behind, and you might be leaving behind a grail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might tell a person, hey, I'll take the comics and not the pulps. And you might be leaving the first appearance of Conan. You might be leaving the first appearance of Tarzan, of the Phantom, of
the Shadow.
The Shadow. So at least, I'm not saying go out there and buy pulps. I'm just saying just learn about it so that way you know. And you have a little bit of more knowledge when you go out there and you, in the wild, and you see these things.
Yeah, I remember making a comment to Paul saying, you know, this I could do, like, I could go through the boxes. I could do some digging, cause just to see. I'm not going to do digging at a comic convention unless I'm looking for a particular character issue. But even with that digging, I have no idea. Like, I was like, oh, $10 seems like a good price. $50, I could see it. Now, mind you, you might be getting overcharged up the ass, but
maybe
you don't know that.
But well, I think like the cover issue.
Jimmy made a good comment. Is a $10 pulp the equivalent of a $1 book?
Yeah. There were a bunch of $10, $20, and then I'm like, is this the new one $5, $10 box, you know? So, yeah, it was humbling to say the least.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. Totally humbled, but I'm glad we did it. I'm glad I learned. I'm glad we actually took the time and, you know, went through all this stuff. And, you know, at least we came back a little bit more knowledgeable.
Yeah, man, the more you know.
And became friends with some people.
Right.
Hopefully you get to see them again. There are actually a handful of these conventions. So, Windy City Pulp and Paper Convention happens in Chicago, and then I believe Pulp Fest is next in August. But I think it overlaps with other conventions.
In Pennsylvania,
yeah. So let us know what you guys think. Is anybody interested in pulps? Is anybody interested in selling pulps? Give us a call. We'll go check out your collection. Obviously, we don't know much, so we'll... Yeah. Till next time.
Hey, thank you for watching. If you liked what you watched, give us a like, subscribe, follow us on IG, Appease the Algorithm Gods, and just let us know how we're doing.